Thanks for tuning in. This is Cognitive Soccer. We're sitting with Dax McCarty. Me and Dax kind of played together back in the day, right, Dax?
Way back in the day.
Tell us something you remember about me when I was a kid, man. Like something that's something interesting.
You were bigger than everyone else. That's what I remember.
I had a big growth spurt.
Yeah. You were bigger than everyone else. And then you always you were a pair. You always came with your buddy Udy. Guys. Udy. Two of the guys from North Florida who always came down and guest played for our team and made our team better.
Yeah, I was talking to someone earlier. Like me and Udy were the only. There was three quality players from Gainesville, Florida. One was before us who went and played some college in Tallahassee, and then there was me and Udy. That was it. Like our town was known, not known for soccer, man. So it was like, it was interesting. We had no real chances actually. Like
yeah, but I enjoyed when you guys came and guest played for us. You always made our team better. You guys were always you were always good dudes. And I always knew that you guys would raise the level of the team. So yeah, I was really happy whenever I saw your faces come out of the car for a tournament. And I was like, all right, we got the two Gainesville ringers.
There you go. Ringers. Yeah, right. We had a little bit of spice, man. We didn't like hang out with you guys a lot. We had to drive 2 hours. So it's like,
I know.
We were kind of the oddballs drive. That we came in literally for game day. And we're like,
that's it. You guys didn't have to train. That's the dream job, dude. You don't have to train and you can just play games. There you go.
Yeah. My mom loved it. She was less driving for her, but
of course
it was, it was a good time back then. And we took vastly different career paths, man. It was cool to see how, I mean, I took a weird career path, obviously. But yours, man, was awesome. The evolution was just like, did you see it that way though? Like I knew you back then. I don't know. Like, I don't know if I saw it ever, but did you like actually think you were going to be there?
You know what? I had this realization. I think I was probably going into ninth grade, probably going into my freshman year of high school. And it was almost like an epiphany, right? I was playing other sports. My mom, on her side, she really loved tennis. So I played tennis and I enjoyed tennis. I enjoyed basketball. I played a lot of basketball growing up and I played soccer. So I played multiple different sports, which I actually think that really helped me actually develop more of my game in soccer. The cross training, I know soccer's so specialized these days, man. And honestly, that's why I think a lot of kids burn out. And so I distinctly didn't get burned out on soccer because I played other sports and because I enjoyed other sports. But when I did get to the age where you kind of have to start making a decision on if you really, really want to pursue something. And in my head, I told myself, look, I don't like to draw. I don't particularly love math. I don't particularly love science. I don't particularly love history. I love soccer. I mean, that's something that I can say with all my heart. That is what I loved from the day I was born until even up until this point. So if I was going to pursue it and I wanted to be a professional soccer player, I was going to have to take it a little bit more seriously. And so after my freshman year, around my freshman year, I said, you know what, I'm just going to focus on soccer. I'm going to focus on getting better, being the best I can be. And then, you know, once you play a little bit and once you start playing at a higher level, I did ODP. As I'm sure you know what that is, but a lot of our, maybe the younger listeners or people don't know what that is. This was way before the academy days. I did ODP and I kept getting picked on every team. First, it was the region team in your state, then the state team, then the region three team, which was like from Florida all the way up to North Carolina, all the way over to Texas and all those states in between, all the best players. And then eventually to the national team. And I kept making it and I kept feeling good about myself. And I kept trying to get to a higher and higher level until eventually, you know, when I got invited to the under 17 national team program down in residency, over in Bradenton, Florida, that's when I really, really had the confidence that I was going to be able to turn pro and make a career out of it, man. So it's been a long journey, but it's been a fun one.
Yeah. Is there something, it's kind of interesting because I was talking to someone the other day also about how she said that she felt that people not hyped her, but told her that she was that good, that she believed it enough to go to those, I mean, for example, going to IMG, going to these faraway places, going to camps, it's not the easiest thing. But I feel like if you're told that, she was like, yeah, I feel like I was told that I was so good that I just thought it throughout my entire career until I finally was, you know, given a taste of reality. But is there a sense of that too? That like it just
people sometimes can't... and here's the delicate balancing act that I think you have to find as either a young person trying to make it in a certain career, whether that be professional sports or whether that be being a scientist or whether that be being a brain surgeon. I think a lot of things that have to do with athletics can actually be translated to just general life terms. Mm-hmm. For me, the biggest balancing act that you have to walk if you want to become a professional athlete, professional soccer player, whatever sport you play, is you have to walk a fine line between having a small amount of arrogance and telling yourself every day that I'm the best and I want to be one of the best players in the world, or I want to be one of the best players in my hometown, or I want to be one of the best players in my state, or I want to make the national team. And you have to have that little bit of arrogance. But that arrogance can't turn into cockiness, and it can't turn into an inflated ego and an inflated sense of yourself. Because if you have a little bit of arrogance, that can be a little bit of arrogant confidence, as I'll put it. You know, you have to walk that tightrope between being arrogant and being a little bit confident in yourself and being just cocky and not a good person, and starting to believe your own hype and starting to read your own press clippings. Back in the day, it was newspapers, right? When me and you were growing up, you just saw your name in the newspaper and you thought you were hot stuff. But now, you know, you have Twitter, you have Instagram, you have all these highlight videos and YouTube videos that kids want to make, and that's fine. But you know, my biggest advice is don't read your own press, right? Have a little bit of arrogance, have a lot of confidence in yourself. You have to believe in yourself, because if you don't believe in yourself, no one else will. So walk that fine line between being confident, maybe a little bit arrogant, but not cocky. Nobody likes that.
Yeah, I like that you said that with the social media has changed how, I think it's changed how kids see themselves, because anyone can be famous now, right? You post a video and you got 100,000 views, you're suddenly an amazing keeper, apparently.
Right. It's not, but here's the thing, man. It's not the real world. So people need to understand, and this is me being a little bit older generation, kind of get off my lawn, so to speak. Look, I used to see back in the day all these kids that we played with and we played against, and they could juggle a ball 1,000 times, and they could do 10 step overs in a row, and they could do back heels, and they could flick the ball up and you know, do like little twirls with the ball in the air, and it was really cool. It looked great, and it impressed everybody. But how does that translate to being a good soccer player in a team environment, right? So look, you have guys like Cristiano Ronaldo, guys like Neymar, you know, guys that have played at the very highest level, the best players in the world, and they do all that stuff at an incredibly high level. But they did it also in a team setting. They did it playing pickup soccer in favelas in Portugal and in Brazil. And they weren't just sitting there by themselves, you know, saying, okay, I want to juggle the ball 1,000 times just to say I can juggle the ball 1,000 times and it'll look cool. They actually worked on things that would be able to translate into a game environment, right? They played Joga Bonito. They worked on things, 1v1s, all that different type of stuff. And back then, they didn't care if it was on YouTube. They didn't care if it was on video, right? They did it because that was their way out. That was their way to go from being poor to not only being rich and being able to take care of themselves, but take care of their families and become known as some of the best players in the world. So all the stuff on social media, all the stuff online, it's great. If you goes back to the inflated sense of ego, right? And it's like one of the reasons why Instagram probably got rid of likes, because people were starting to just post things and saying, oh, I hope people see all these likes that I'm getting, or how many likes am I going to get on a video? That doesn't mean anything. You know what means to the substance is, what do your parents tell you? What does your coach tell you? What does he think of a play that you just made or didn't make, right? What does he think of a mistake you made? How do you fit into a team environment? Are you a good teammate? Are you a good leader? Are you a guy that is going to be counted on to win games, or are you going to be a guy or a girl that's counted on to just play your role and make the team better? So these are all the little things that go into it, man. But social media is tricky for the younger generation. I definitely think that.
Yeah, no, I agree strongly, man. I think you're right with the fact of, like, you know, not taking your own press. That was the biggest thing that I liked you said, because, man, we love seeing ourselves. Especially nowadays, we love seeing ourselves online. And the problem is that doesn't give us an accurate test of what we are, how good we are, how bad we are. Whereas, like, you know, we're able to kind of look at ourselves a little bit more, I don't know what you say.
Honestly.
Yeah, honestly and objectively, where it's like, okay, here's what I am. I'm this good. I can do this well. I can do this bad. And that's kind of the flip side of it. And I always talk about is being able to make mistakes, right? Because we all try to get our best. We're all like, dude, I got to kick the best ball. I got to catch the perfect thing. We don't think I got to be able to make the perfect mistake. I got to be able to make a mistake and then be able to bounce back and do something good later. That's the thing I see, you know, a lot of kids struggle with that side of like, they fear mistakes so much that they don't even want to try something outside the comfort zone.
You know, for younger kids, there was this guy named Michael Jordan, and he didn't play soccer. He played basketball, and he's a North Carolina Tar Heel, really famous basketball player. And he's probably the greatest basketball player to ever live. And I don't know what interview it was. I don't know when he said it. I don't know what the context was. But people were asking him, you know, how are you so great? How have you done all these great things? And how are you, you know, considered the greatest basketball player ever? And he said, look, he said, the only reason I'm so great is because I failed over and over and over and over and over again. The only reason I am successful is because I learned from my failures. And I did fail over and over again to then become successful. So becoming successful doesn't happen overnight. Becoming a professional athlete doesn't happen overnight. You have to learn from mistakes. You have to make mistakes if you want to learn. And that's, I firmly believe that's the only way you can learn. And so what do you see on social media, right? You see someone putting a ball, juggling it five times on a full volley and putting it in the top corner in a little like hula hoop or something, right? Yeah. How many takes did that take to make, right? Did it take five takes? Did it take 100 takes? But you only post the one that goes in, right? You don't post the ones that you miss.
Yeah.
So that's where you get that little bit of ego and that little bit of, hey, like, look at all these perfect things that I did. And I think the best players and the players that are going to become something one day and that have a dream of playing professionally, they're the ones that aren't afraid to make mistakes. They're the ones that aren't afraid to look at themselves critically, as you said earlier, and say, hey, the best in the world, guess what? Messi is the best player to ever live. He's made hundreds of thousands of mistakes in his life and his career on the field. But he makes everything look so easy because he learned from those mistakes. And guess what? You still are going to make those mistakes. You're only human. But it's the guys and the girls that can make the least amount of mistakes in the highest pressure situations that are the most successful.
Well, and it helps to get the mistakes out and get the – I call them kind of education moments because – they really are. Yeah, it's a mistake, but right away you've learned something. Like you touch the fire, you've learned right away never to touch that again. And so if you learn it earlier, though, that's the biggest thing. I try to get kids younger to accept losing, accept mistakes, accept failure, and bounce back quicker. And I go back to like not my first pro game because I played in Puerto Rico for a minute, but when I hopped over and played in Thailand, which was really early, I was 21. I was playing there. I'd sat the bench for maybe 3 months. But the first game I had subbed in for was 40, 50,000 people, you know. And you know how in Asia, it's like it's madness there. I went in. I'm doing really well. I'm just covering everything I need to. High balls are easy because everyone's 4 foot nothing. But I get a back pass and I get a little fancy because I was playing in Puerto Rico. So I was used to using my feet a lot. And I cut the first striker, feel really hot. Another striker came in from the side, stole the ball, ties the game, and that was my biggest mistake. But it happened literally my first big game I had played. I mean, I wasn't offered another contract. I was in the newspaper for months. You know, it was disheartening. It was rough, but at the same time, first of all, I never used my feet like that ever again. I never messed around. I was always more safe. Second of all, when I did make a mistake, I was like, okay, how can I bounce back tomorrow? Like, how can I, okay, if the newspapers on Monday are bad, how can I make them good by Wednesday? And it was like a hardening of my armor to go, okay, I'm going to make those mistakes, but what's my plan? What's my fixing it plan? You know,
you have to have a short memory. I think, I think the best players, they have the shortest memory, right? And I don't just mean when you fail. I mean, when you succeed as well, the best advice I can give is just never get too high, never get too low. Just try to stay even keel throughout the whole process, right? Because that's what means the most is the process of actually improving and getting better. And you're going to make mistakes. You made a crucial mistake in a big game and it cost you. But then how do you move on from that? How positive are you? Can you get better? And then once you're in that situation again, you'll know exactly what you need to do to be successful, right? And then if you are successful, if you score a goal in a big game, guess what? Forget about it. Enjoy it that night. Next morning, go back to work, right? Focus on your shooting. Focus on your heading. Focus on your weak foot. Focus on the things that you can do to make you a better player. And that's what I always like to tell people is that you're going to have these ebbs and flows. You're going to be peaks, right, valleys. You're going to have it all in between no matter what you do, no matter what career you're in. The people that usually come out on top and are the best at what they do are the people that can stay level-headed and the people that can forget about not just the bad things, but the good things as well, and then try to continuously improve and evolve as a player. I'm turning 33 years old on April 30th. And so I've been around the block a few times and I still feel that I can get better as a player. I still feel that I haven't hit my ceiling. I still feel that I can improve because when I play, I'm highly critical of myself and I watch games back and I could make 99 great passes in a game out of 100. But that one pass, that one bad pass is the only pass that I'm going to remember for the whole night. And it's going to bother me. It's going to eat me inside. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch video and I'm going to ask myself, how can I make that pass so I'm 100 out of 100, right? And so those are things as a pro that you just pick up along the way that no matter how good you think you played, you can always play better.
Yeah. No, that's one thing I respect about your game. The games that I've seen you play, when you do make a mistake, and they're not terrible mistakes, but it'll just be a ball you're trying to string through the middle or something. When it doesn't work out, I see you run like a mad dog after the player, after the ball. And that's just something that I don't know why most players don't feel that way, because someone who's hungry, for me, I would tell this mantra in my head when there was a striker coming. I would just say, I want the ball. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. And I would get more angry as I got closer. I was like, that's my possession. That's mine. Give it to me.
That's something that has to be learned and that has to be trained. You can go throughout a whole game and you can make a ton of great plays that don't really lead to anything, goals or chances or whatever. But if you make a bad play and you have a good reaction, that can lead to something spectacular. Because it's those moments in transition, those moments when the ball turns over, when things aren't perfect, when no one really has possession and the ball's bouncing around. If you have a better reaction than your opponent, or you're more tuned in mentally, or you tell yourself, I can get to this ball faster than the other guy, that usually leads to big moments in the games. If you watch the biggest games, if you watch games in the World Cup, if you watch games in the Champions League, the biggest moments in the game usually come in transition. When the ball is turned over, whoever's quicker mentally, whoever has a better reaction, it's not necessarily about skill. I mean, of course, those players are some of the best in the world, so their skill level is off the charts. But they also have the best reactions out of anyone in the world, and that's why they create chances at the clip that they do. I mean, I'm sure people watch Liverpool all the time because Liverpool is the best team in the world right now, in my opinion. And their coach, Jurgen Klopp, has them all just a well-oiled machine. Doesn't matter. They take risks, right? And if they make a mistake, they have all 11 players swarming the ball. Like, go win the ball back, right? It's kind of like what you said as a goalkeeper. Like, I want the ball. Like, give me the ball back. If you have a whole team, not just 11 players, but the seven on the bench and then the guys that are coming through the academy, if you have everyone with that mindset and that mentality, you're going to be a really, really difficult team to beat. And so that's what I really like about when I make a mistake, like, okay, it can happen. Like, don't pout. Like, don't put your head down. Don't have a bad reaction. Don't blame somebody else. It's not anyone else's fault. It's your fault. Go make it better. Go make up for it, right? Yeah. Go improve that. Go win the ball back and do something positive for your team.
Yeah, I try to tell kids as well, like, you can participate in the game and only participate 5%. You know, you might not score a goal. You might not make the save or even touch the ball, but, and you know this, in the midfield, you might have made a movement that allowed space for someone else. You might have did a one-touch pass that allowed more movement to go quicker. And so those little contributions might not have been that giant thing you expected. Like, I didn't score. I didn't do this or that. But then I did participate in the overall objective. And that's something that kids forget, is that, like, I might not do much today. I might literally make one pass. But I've done my job. I've been successful. I've attained my goal. And that's something they miss, for sure.
Yeah, sometimes as a midfielder, especially a midfielder that plays a little further back, right? I'm not a number 10 or I'm not a creative midfielder, but sometimes instead of scoring a goal or getting assists, sometimes the things that I take the most pride in as a player because of the position I play is the pass before the pass. So if I'm in the midfield and I can find a pass to a teammate who's in a really good advantageous position, and then his pass or her pass leads to a goal. So it's almost like a hockey assist, right? The pass before the pass that gets to the goal. So I take a lot of pride if I'm the one that's able to make that pass, because maybe you didn't get the actual assist, but you helped set up the goal. Like, you still contributed, right? You still contributed in breaking a team down. And sometimes that stuff, it gets overlooked, right? And so that, I take a lot of pride in that, especially as like a deep lying midfielder whose job isn't necessarily to create goals. I enjoy being involved in the buildup and the execution of good plays.
If we're counting that, then I'd be so happy to, all the times I threw out a ball or I punted it and it landed at the striker, he did all the work and then he touches it across. So instead of me getting the...
How many times do you see a goalkeeper make a great save or make a great catch on a cross and then immediately start a transition moment where boom, 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 two touches later, the ball's in the back of the net, right?
And that's, not many people can do that. So I feel like that's something that you gotta give credit for those things, you know? And like you said, if you're part of the buildup, like if you made the initial pass that started the final pass, like if you hadn't have made that, that would have happened. I feel like you're part of the chain. It's like the same exact, I don't know. I would take credit. Well, we know that. I think midfielder and goalkeeper know there's not much glory there. Unless for those key moments when you score, when you make that final save.
I don't know. I think obviously the headline getters, the strikers, the guys that score goals, the number 10s, the guys that can do fancy skills that everyone puts on YouTube. Course, those guys and girls are they're the main attraction. But if you ask anyone involved in soccer where they would start their team and the positions where you would build the spine of your team and where you want to build a team around, I think a lot of people in very high up places would say, well, we want the spine of our team to be strong, so we're going to start with a really good goalkeeper, or we're going to start with a really good defensive midfielder, or we're going to start with a really good center back, you know? Because if the spine of your team is strong right up the middle of the field, you know, that's where most of the action occurs. You can build around that, and then you can go and try to be successful.
No, absolutely. I think it's key positions, and I don't know if I pick goalkeeper for any reason except for I was big, like you said, and I was nuts, man. I just liked, you got to be crazy, but I'm a certain type of crazy, though. I think there's a lot of level. I've realized, no, I don't know if I'm control. I just, I don't know. I try to anticipate and get, you know, I did a lot of visualization stuff when I grew up, and you know, if you heard about that stuff, they say go through the whole game. I would do the whole 90-minute game in my head, and there was this whole almost not guessing but anticipating moments that I felt like I got lucky. I feel like that I look back at some saves and I'm like, damn, that was a really good save, but in the moment I don't know if I was really thinking or if I was more just reading the trajectory or reading the hip or something that was minute detail, and I just guessed and went, hey, it worked out great, almost like a gambler. And then when it didn't go, you know, right the way I liked it, then it would, of course, like a gambler, would piss me off a lot and I'd be in the dumps. But I was going to ask you as well, dude, like, do you have a moment that was your, you know, because you got, I'm sure you're a lot better now bouncing back, but was there that moment you've had in your career that was just like shit hit the fan and you didn't feel like you could bounce back?
You know what, man? It wasn't necessarily anything that happened on the field. You know, knock on wood, I've never scored an own goal, so it's nothing like crazy like that. I've made plenty of mistakes in my career, plenty of mistakes in games. But there was a moment in my when I was growing up in soccer, in my life that really affected me. And that moment was when I was trying to make the under 20 World Cup team, for the under 20 national team. Qualifying, you had to qualify for the World Cup just like you do in the regular World Cup and at the normal age group. But for the under 20s, we had a camp that was going to lead into the qualifying tournament. And it was a normal qualifying tournament. You played a few games, you advance out of your group, you win one game, you know, or I forget the exact process, but it was the qualifying team to go to the U20 World Cup. And I thought I had a great camp leading up to that. And I got cut from that camp, one of the last cuts before the qualifying team went to World Cup qualifying for the under 20s. So that moment in my career, and you know, I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but that was the first time in my soccer playing career that anyone had ever been like, you're not good enough. You're not going, you know, cause I had always, you know, I was on the under 17 national team and I got a scholarship to North Carolina and, you know, I got drafted in the first round of the MLS draft and all this stuff. And so that was the first time when I actually had failed. I had failed. That was a goal of mine and I had failed to accomplish that goal. And that really hurt me and that really stuck with me. And, you know, that one took a little bit longer for me to get over because I was still young. I was probably 17, 18 years old. And when you're that young and you have such a big disappointment, it can really affect you and it can linger and it can affect other parts of your life. But after a few days, you know, I bounced back. I told myself, okay, this just means you have to get better. You have to improve. You have to work on the things that the coaches have told you that they want to see you improve. And so 6 months later, I had played really well and I was playing with my team in Dallas and I got a phone call from the head coach of the U20 team and he said, hey, you know, I really like what you're doing. I want you to come into the World Cup, the U20 World Cup camp. And I ended up going into camp and they qualified for the World Cup, obviously, in Canada in 2007. And I ended up making the actual World Cup team to go to Canada to play in the U20 World Cup. So I went from having such a huge failure and disappointment, not making that qualifying roster, to watching them qualify without me. And then I turned that disappointment into something positive. And then I ended up going to the big dance, the actual one that meant more to me than anything, the U20 World Cup. And so that was a moment in my career where I turned a big failure into something positive and obviously made the most of it. But that moment really sticks with me.
Which it could have been easy to give up after that moment. You know, I think it's when you get hit with those ones, there's a big fear. There's a hole in you, the fear of just like any other moment that comes up after that, you double think it, you know, whereas before that you might have just been going off instinct. Did you have like a process? Was there certain things that you told yourself? Was there sort of like,
I told myself I have to get better. I have to improve. I could have felt sorry for myself. I could have made excuses. I could have said that the coach was an idiot, which at the time I thought he was, but I could have made excuses and I could have said, well, the players that he took over me aren't better than me. I could have made every excuse in the book and I could have felt sorry for myself and I could have been negative.
Yeah.
But after the initial anger and shock of not making that team, a switch flipped in my head and I said, well, guess what? You still, if you improve, can make this World Cup team if they qualify. So use that as positive energy, right? Go work on the things that you need to get better at. Go improve your physicality. I think one of the things they told me was that I wasn't physical enough, right, to play in the midfield. You know, I've always been a smaller guy and I've never really been that physically imposing like you, right? Like we're polar opposites, you know what I mean? And so for me, I wanted to work on my defensive side, right? Winning tackles, winning duels, my positioning defensively. If I was going to play in the middle of the midfield, I was going to have to improve every aspect of what it takes to be a physical midfielder growing up in that environment, right? And so I tried to do that with my club team, and I thought I did a good job. I thought I improved little by little by little. And then when I went back into that World Cup camp before, and I told myself, there's no way that I'm not going to make this roster. I'm going to do everything it takes to make this roster and go to this World Cup. And sure enough, I did.
That's big time, dude. I think a lot of times, like a lot of players don't get that self-motivation. They rely on a lot of coaches giving them feedback, you know?
Right, but the only thing players have to realize, doesn't matter how old you are, you are going to fail. Failure is a part of life. Failure is a part of the process of becoming a better person. LeBron James is one of the top three basketball players that's ever lived. And he's been to the NBA Finals 9 or 10 times, and he's lost in the NBA Finals more than he has won, right? That doesn't stop him from trying to get back and get better and go back to the finals every single year. So you can look at all the best players, all the best athletes, all the successful people in the world. If you want to be a billionaire, you know, go look at Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, right? They failed numerous times in their lives before they had that one idea that clicked and made them successful, made them what they are. So
failures. Yeah, no, you're right. Like you said, I mean, earlier you said it. It's soccer is relative to life. things you learn on the field. And I didn't learn this till the last 2 years of my career. I was very much like, you know, like you say, I would get on the field and become a different person. And that was difficult. I needed to have the more stability, the more composure. And that's what I learned. I learned that if I was really messed up off the field, it would apply to on the field and vice versa. So I really learned about just making myself better as a person would improve my soccer skills and vice versa. Like spending more time on the field would keep me more dedicated and motivated.
Right.
So it's definitely it's a battle like that. But you've come out big, man. You're still growing, but I mean, it's like I like how you say you still. I mean, realistically, yeah, you are 2/3 of the way through. You still got a big chunk.
I hope so, man. That's the goal. I'm trying to be like Tom Brady, play till I'm 40 or 50.
Dude, or Buffon. Look at Buffon. The guy's killing it. The guy looks better than he did when he was 20.
There you go. But, Thank you for having me, man. Sorry, I wish I could stay on.
No, this is. I don't want to take too much of your time. I think this is big. People will love this. I mean, I get big feedback from anything I'm putting up now. Just because I'm trying to offer different insight and ask questions that aren't sugarcoated, man. People want to know. It's not an easy route. And if you are going to go and become the 1% or 2%, you got to know that uphill battle so that you don't get to the middle of it and go, oh my God, I wasn't expecting this.
Expecting unexpected.
Yeah.
And prepare for the worst, expect the best is what I always say. So, yeah, man, big time. Man, I appreciate your time. And
it's been a pleasure, buddy.